Good afternoon and welcome to another episode of And Then There's That, a bi-weekly podcast of people, politics, and punditry in Howard County on the HOCO Mojo Network. I'm Paul Scalney, and I'm here at our new venue, The Mall in Columbia, with my co-host, Dennis Lane. Joining us today is political junkie and avid blogger, Tom Cole, known to his readers and fans as HOCO Rising. But as always, we first like to take a look at some of the news making the headlines this week. Dennis, let's get us started.
Paul, before we get into the news, first of all, happy anniversary. It's been 1 year since we started our podcast.
Hey, you know, it's so funny. I left the house this morning, and I forgot your anniversary present at the house. I got it, though.
You did? I was going to bring a cupcake with a candle in it, but I forgot.
Maybe next week.
It's a little hard to eat while we're punditrying here. And also, in kind of to mark this one-year anniversary, we've moved to yet another location. We're in the lower level of the Mall in Columbia, still in town center. And this is a result of a conversation we have with the mall that they welcomed us here, and we're happy to be here.
And we're happy to share our show with a whole new group of individuals.
This is kind of exciting. Probably in future shows we'll have a little speaker set up here so that people can listen in as they walk by. But already it feels different.
It does. And with the holidays coming up, I think we're going to have more and more people. It's going to be nice.
Of course, I missed the beers that we had at Clyde's before the show. But
I must have missed that.
Anyway, getting into the stories. My first story that I got, the Columbia mother, her name is, Elaine Brunson. Is suing the school board for racial discrimination.
Oh, boy. Here we go again.
I know. Another lawsuit. But here's the thing. It turns out Brunson's son was caught cheating. And then she thought he wasn't treated fairly as a result of this cheating.
Well, you know there's a right way and a wrong way to cheat treater to treat cheaters. To cheat treaters. That's back to Halloween, right?
We ought to give her credit for not being a member of the school board while suing as well.
Well, that's true. She does get points for that.
Which we can't say for everyone.
Yeah, we can't say for everyone. But, you know, one of these crazy suits, it's a helicopter mom. You know, but she didn't leave it just well enough alone. She wasn't upset about the fact that her son had been caught cheating. She then started was she circulating a petition? What was it? She was at a football game distributing pamphlets complaining about the treatment that her son and the treatment of her son by Adelton and the school board administrators, accusing these officials of being bullies and discriminating against her son.
So he's being bullied because he cheated the wrong way. If he had cheated the way the popular kids do it, he wouldn't gotten bullied and it would have been all right.
I guess. Then there's that. Just a quick one. We've just come through a political season. We've had elections on Tuesday. Big news in all the local press and the blogs. But the number one story on Explore Howard this week was cheerleading. Howard repeats Fall County as Fall County champion.
Well, maybe that's why the incumbents did so well.
And then there's that.
We've had a series of bizarre stories dealing with the Howard County Police, and we've had some strange stories dealing with weird, wacky criminals out there. So apparently some guy went on a drive-by shooting, shot a couple cars up, and shot a horse.
Shot a horse.
I guess the election wasn't to his liking. I don't know.
What is up with that? That was the number two most popular story on Explore Howard. Again, politics didn't even... I don't think politics registered in the top three. Anyway, sad story. I picked up another story today. This was in today's Washington Post. I had a little story about the upcoming winter. Of course, we went through one hell of a winter last year with record-breaking snowfalls.
Big kahuna.
The big kahuna, and I'm also very concerned about it. I like those storms once in a while, but according to the Capital Weather Gang and the Washington Post, that's not going to happen this year. It says, we most certainly aren't getting as much snow as last winter, probably not even close.
You know, what struck me about this, the meteorologists take a lot of flack for, screwing up forecasts and whatever, and this one strikes me as just as funny. Here we have record snows last year, and the forecast is it won't be as bad. I mean, how many of us could have really done that?
Again, it's a little tricky for forecasting weather in Maryland.
Well, it's very unlikely they'll get that wrong.
We hope so.
We'll be applying for Bob Turk's job.
Another story that I got, this is, the Howard County Police, again, were in the news, and not in a good way. Turns out they had a little golf tournament at it, Turf Valley, and one of the officers, or maybe a couple of them, their behavior was I don't know, less than professional.
Unbecoming of an officer.
Unbecoming of an officer. Now, I got a little bit of a problem with this.
Now, I don't even know where you're going with the story, but did he park his cart in a handicapped spot?
No, this time he parked it in the clubhouse.
Oh, okay. And or a water feature.
And or the water feature. You know, we talked about this at lunch when we were going over the story. I just think that, you know, give the cops a break here. I mean, it was a fun outing. Sure, there was some drinking at a golf tournament. God forbid. How many of us have been to a golf tournament where there hasn't been drinking? I notice everybody's being quiet
on that. What struck me about this is I think there's certain jobs out there and certain people that have high-profile positions, and it's very difficult, I think, to separate yourself from your job. If you're an officer, you're an officer, and it's very difficult, I think, to be yourself and be able to say, you know what, I wasn't a cop that day. I was just being a regular Joe, and I was drinking. And, you know, we've talked about this in other situations with politicians, for instance, where it's very difficult for you to say, well, I wasn't working that day, and therefore I shouldn't be indicted for something I did as the county executive. You know what, you're always the county executive, or you're always a cop, or you're always a business owner. Just the way it is.
And also, these are people that are in charge of maintaining law and order. So when you imagine these people, yes, they were off, but at the same time, in a public, they weren't in their basement drinking a couple beers. They were on a golf course.
But at the same time, now, no charges were pressed against them by Turf Valley that I know of. I mean,
they didn't press them against themselves, is what you're saying.
Well, and then there's that. Okay, well, Paul, that's all I had. Do you have anything else?
That's it.
We probably should get on with our guest then.
So our political junkie, Tom Cole, local blogger, welcome. Thank you for joining us
today.
Thank
you guys for having me on. Love the show.
So we love your blog. Yeah, it's a mutual love fest here.
It was a big week for the political blogging in Howard County. And what were the surprises for you, Tom?
I think the biggest surprise for most people that were paying attention, I don't know if I was so much surprised, but that it just stayed the same. I mean, Larry Carson's article about the county offices was spot on when he called it status quo, because our incumbents were voted back in, and when Republicans were expected to have a big year, they actually lost an office. They lost a judge on the orphans court. So locally, we didn't see much in the way of Republican bump at all. If anything, we saw Republicans go down. Republicans go down in votes. Republicans go down in the margins of victory, or actually the margins of defeat, because right. they haven't won elections in a long time. So the surprise, to the extent there was one, that was that things remain the same.
Well, and I think Joan Becker, who's the chairwoman of the Howard County Republican Party, in an interview with, I believe, Larry Carson, said it may be an anti-incumbent year for 49 out of the 50 states, but not Maryland. And, you know, it's really interesting that it really went, the wave really hit our country across the board, with the exception of Maryland.
Right. And I think part of that is that we've talked about this before. There was no tending of the crop. I mean, there was absolutely
no tending of the crop.
There was no reason to expect in Howard County for there to be big numbers of Republicans. I looked at this before I came on here. In 2007, there were 55,987 active registrations of Republicans. In 2010, there were 54,225. Republicans went down in number, despite the fact that total registrations went up by approximately 10,000 voters.
And the unaffiliated is actually increased.
Unaffiliated went up. Democrat went up. Everybody's going up. Republicans are going down. This is while population is increasing.
So what's going on here with the Republican Party, with the local Republicans?
I don't think you can blame anyone in particular. I don't even think you can blame the organization. What you can note is that there is not a plan. The plans, to the extent that they are brought to anyone's attention, are normally rejected as either being simplistic or impossible, or more recently we're hearing that federal employees will always vote Democrat. Well, you know what? Federal employees aren't going anywhere. There's actually going to be more of them. So you need to figure out a way to reach those voters. You need to figure out a way to make sure that your message reaches those voters. And you need to realize that what you're doing isn't working. Insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results.
And, you know, I hear people talk about that. My own dear mom was a Republican, and she worked for FDA for years. So I'm sorry, Paul, I've cut you off.
No. That's all right. Quite all right. Good discussion. You know, it strikes me that, and I've talked to a lot of business owners, and they feel somewhat disconnected with the Republican Party. And business owners traditionally are supporters of the Republican Party and Republican candidates. And I think there's a feeling that individuals aren't as elected officials and candidates on the Republican side aren't really connected with the business community. They're not really listening to what the business community says. And, you know, to Bob Ehrlich's credit, he did a lot of business roundtables. He did several here in Howard County. He came and he listened. but somehow it's just not getting through. Somehow there's no connection. Maybe they're hearing it but not or listening but not hearing it or something. I'm just not sure.
And locally, I mean, to all you that Republicans that are listening, we need a business leader. Right now, the Republican Party has political leaders. It has grassroots leaders. It has no business leaders. So instead of complaining about,
we're too busy running our businesses.
Well, you might be, but you also spent some time complaining about how Republicans aren't having
success.
Except
for Brian Meschken. He's got time too.
It's the old joke about, and this was during the Obama election, about why there's so many people at Democratic rallies and not so many at Republican rallies. Well, that's because the Republicans are all at work.
There are Democrats throwing their iPods across the room right now because they're angry at the stereotype.
All right, well, let's back it up. Let's go down through the districts. You know, Council District 1, that's Courtney Watson, was the incumbent, challenged by a former Ehrlich Director of Transportation. Secretary of Transportation. A strong Republican candidate, although we've talked about before about bringing the old guys back out. And the most hotly contested of all the councilmatic districts in Howard County. What went on there?
It's all Paul's fault. It's
but he's referring because Paul was one of the Republicans for Watson.
Right. Well, I think a little bit, and I talked about this on my blog. Part of what happens when you see people cross party lines is they need to have permission. And where you find permission sometimes is by noting a high-profile member of the other party crossing lines. Now, I'm not saying that Paul did this, but I'm saying that Republicans
that was nice.
Republicans for Watson started that line. And I think that Courtney, and, you know, I've already been pegged for betraying the Republican Party and saying these type of things. But I think Courtney did a darn good job.
She had a well-organized campaign. There's no doubt about that.
Well, I'm saying on the council as well.
Yes.
Because you could not look at a piece of legislation depending on whether or not
Greg Fox's only ally.
Right. Exactly. You didn't know Courtney was going to look at the legislation and decide on its face. I mean, she fought to evaluate Healthy Howard's funding and to not just take it as it was approached to the council.
And she's a business person like Greg Fox, too.
Exactly. So, Paul, since it was your fault, do you have any perspective on this one?
Well, I think we should take note that I stayed awfully silent during that conversation.
why did you support Courtney over
Look, I think I agree with Tom. I think Courtney did a good job. I think she is a conservative Democrat. I've got people in the Republican Party that would disagree with that assessment, and I've had conversations with many, and they would point out to pieces of legislation that Courtney did not support that would typically have been pro-Republican or pro-conservative legislation. I think she's done a good job. I think the Republican Party failed to put forth a candidate that was able to connect with the constituents and with the business owners. I don't think it's the constituents or the business owners' responsibility to reach out to candidates and elected officials to gain their support. I think it goes the other way around. I think candidates and elected officials, whether they're incumbents or others, it's their job to reach out to the business community, to reach out to their constituencies, and to build and forge relationships. And I think Bob Flanagan failed to do that.
And one thing that I'll always remember about this race is that Bob knew transportation down, and that district one, where we're talking about Route 40, where we're talking about areas, the Normandy Shopping Center, areas where they're talking about the next round of big development going, Bob could have nailed that. He could have
even Route 1.
He could have taken his transportation expertise, and the one time he talked about it at the chamber debates that Dennis and I were moderating, when he talked about that, he had everybody's attention.
Yeah.
But then he followed that up by calling Courtney a potted plant, and everybody realized
that's what they remembered from the debate.
That he's just going back to old politics, right. and he lost substance.
Yeah. Well, and to his credit, he is a formidable expert in this area on transportation, and he did not work that as effectively as he could have.
Now, what you heard a lot from the Repubs was tax cut, tax cut, tax cut, tax increase. You know, I don't think that resonated with the voters in Howard County. All right.
We've also talked about Howard County. You know, we're somewhat insulated from the recession. We really have a good life here in Howard County. We have great schools. We've got relatively low unemployment. If you don't go too far north or south, you've got a fairly low crime rate. So we really do have a fairly good place to live here. And we had a discussion over lunch as to what role did that really play in the incumbents winning, across both sides, Republicans, Democrats alike?
I mean, I'm going to keep going back to the registration numbers because I think that, for instance, Dennis Schrader was a very good candidate. Jen Tarasa did nothing to deserve not being reelected. She was very good on the council, good for her constituents. But, you know, from my review and my talking with Dennis and my experience with him, I thought he was a very strong candidate, and many people agreed. But yet he is not going to be able to overcome registration numbers.
Especially not down in D13, right?
Right.
Or Council District 3.
But in terms of things doing well, I think that that's probably feeding into the fact, if things weren't doing well, I think we would be talking about different registration numbers and the direction that they're going. If our county was going downhill, we would probably have an increase in Republicans. Not dramatic, but you would see people saying it's the Democrats' fault. And things, and since things are doing well, Democrats can just as easily say it's the Democrats' fault that things are doing well.
Well, and to Obama's credit, he was a machine when it came to getting people to register during the last presidential election. And I suspect that a lot of the increases that you cited earlier in registration numbers came during that election period and not now.
Right. So.
Well, moving on to District 2. We want to try to get through all five here today.
Yeah, and District 2, I mean...
the most uneventful of the five races, probably.
God bless Reg Avery, but Calvin Ball is the superhero of local politics. I mean, you're not going to find many people that don't like Calvin.
You know, that is the truth. You talk to people of both parties, everybody likes Calvin Ball. So, you know, let's talk about, before we move on to District 3, so what happens? Does Reg Avery stick around?
I hope so. I mean, as a Republican, and yes, Republicans, I still am registered that way, no matter what you may say. As a Republican, I hope...
I didn't say that.
I hope Reg... Well, you're an unaffiliated, Dennis. I hope Reg sticks around. He's a good public speaker. He's great one-on-one in conversation. I hope that he has more to learn about the county and doesn't tell people that he, quote, doesn't let his wife go shopping at certain times because...
that didn't come off very well.
We've got a lot of women leaders in this county, and they probably don't like the idea of asking permission to go grocery shopping. So, you know, hopefully Reg sticks around, learns the county a little bit more, and we'll see him again.
And what about Calvin?
Calvin? You know what? Calvin, I don't think, wants to run again, but I want him to. I mean, I'd love to see Calvin do more in this county, do more for his constituents, both in the district and countywide, but I don't know if Calvin's a political animal as much as he is someone that politics has treated well because they like him.
I don't necessarily agree with Calvin on all of his political positions, but no one can argue with the fact that he's just a great guy.
He's a great guy. All right. Well, we'll get back to his future later at the end of the show when we talk about the next phase. But let's move down to what I thought was going to be a much closer race in Councilman District 3. That was incumbent Jen Tarasa. And challenger Dennis Schrader, another former Ehrlich Homeland Security Secretary.
Yeah, right. huge disappointment there for Dennis, I think.
Wow, huge.
Yeah, and that goes back to Jen just being so great with her constituents, the registration numbers being something that Dennis was going to have a very hard time overcoming. And also, we can't ignore the fact that the Democratic Party dumped scores of money into this district. I mean, we don't know yet what happened, but for those that weren't paying attention, there was a slate of candidates, which means they can share money between Ken Ullman, Calvin Ball, Jen Tarasa, as well as the entire Team 13, which was the delegates from District 13.
Roby, Pendergrass, Turner, and who did I miss?
Gazzone.
Yeah. Sorry, guy.
Didn't he get the most votes?
Yeah, I think so.
Those are huge banks of money, yeah. Especially when you consider, you know, with all due respect to Mr. Avery, when you consider the fact that Calvin doesn't have to burn money in his district. I mean, I think I saw one Calvin Ball sign the entire election. I mean,
it wasn't much.
Right. So all that money's going into Jen Tarasa's district. I don't know. I don't live in that district. I don't know what that money could have been spent on, but it was spent on something.
Yeah, Tom, I'm going to challenge you a little bit because I'm not sure I completely agree. I think Jen, like Calvin, is a really nice person, but I'm not sure that her service to her constituents was original. I'm not sure it was unique. I think she was a follower, not a leader. So I think she was well-liked as an individual, and maybe that's all it takes these days. I don't know. But I'm just not sure that her constituent service and her actual work as a county council person was all that impressive.
I think what I've heard is that if there was a meeting in that district regarding something that her constituents cared about, she was there almost every single time. For instance, there's a good part of the cycling community lives in District 3, and there have been a number of meetings that she has been strong advocates for them at those meetings and on the council. And I think that to the extent that people, again, this all goes back to who's paying attention, because if people aren't paying attention, it doesn't matter.
And we've had a number of council people on the show, and we've heard consistently from all of them that a huge portion of their job is constituent services. You know, it's getting the sneakers off the power lines, and it's getting the curb fixed that got busted up. It's those kind of things.
The street light fix. And I think that those people that had a good experience with Jen, they went out and voted. You know, whereas, again, we talk about it. Who was it? There was a Republican activist in the county that said that people in Howard County are fat, dumb, and happy.
Oh, you know what? I won't say his name because...
Oh, come on.
You know what? The only reason people know about him was because he worked his tail off for TPI. So
that's the Taxpayer Protection Initiative.
Right, Taxpayer Protection Initiative.
A misguided effort on the local Republican.
But this...
I've never heard you say that before.
This wayward representative of the Republican Party did call people fat, dumb, and happy because they weren't paying attention to the fact that taxes really hadn't gone up. I mean, what was he trying to get them to pay attention to?
Right.
I do think the point you made about the Democrats dumping huge scores of dollars into County Council District 3 race was huge. I mean, I think there were ads. I didn't personally see them, but I heard that there were ads with Ken Allman and Jen on local TV. And huge dollars were spent, I think, there at the 11th hour to make sure that that seat was preserved by the Democrats.
Right.
Okay. That would take us over to District 4. The high drama in this race, of course, was the primary.
Right.
This was the Mary Kay Sigeti.
Easy for you to say.
I didn't have my beer from Clyde's. That was the problem. Mary Kay Sigeti had a primary battle with Alan Klein, largely over the Columbia Town Center redevelopment issue. And the Republican candidate was kind of invisible.
Right. And, you know, Tom ran in this race before.
You're talking
Tom Diesto. And the last time he ran, he had a closer margin than he did this year. And this year, due to work obligations, and, you know, these candidates do have a job that they need to go back to on November 3rd. So you can't expect them to put their job on hold while they're running for office. And unfortunately, Tom's job required him to spend less time on the campaign than he probably should have.
Did the Republicans abandon him, though?
You mean all five Republicans in that district? this is a very blue district.
I know, but did the county, did he get support from the county party?
I can't tell you. I mean, I know that the county party planned to give money to candidates. Reg Avery, despite the time that he came in, there was a news article, and actually there was a little bit of controversy because there was a news article that said Reg was going to get money from the Central Committee, and then I heard from Republicans later, hey, when you said Reg was going to get money from the party, you were wrong. So I don't know if Tom got money. I know that a lot of the things he used in this election did not have a date on them, and they were from last election, and the things
that's,
he used
in... good enough reason to run again. I still got all these signs.
You may see
same
them in
issues.
4 years.
Let's just recycle them. I mean, you know, maybe that's the problem of why you can't get reelected.
That's why, ladies and gentlemen, look at political signs for years. If there's no year on it, you're going to see those people again.
Like Liz Bobo. All right. Well, again, not much of a story there. Mary Kay really walked into a general election win because... her battle was in the primary. Once that was over, she moved on. So that moves us out to the last of the District 5, Council Matic District 5. This is the lone Republican victory on the council.
Right, and by actually the most out of all the incumbents, he had the largest margin of victory.
Nearly 60.
We're talking about Greg Fox. We haven't mentioned his name. Okay,
nearly 68%.
Yep. And now Greg had a Democratic challenger, though, Dr. Zeneb Beams.
Yep.
Dr. Moonbeams.
Your word, not mine.
Of course, I know. I take credit for that. And she didn't do as well as she thought she'd do.
No, Dr. Beams from...
Is anybody surprised but her?
No. Has
she come out of depression yet? Or?
Dr. Beams is a very passionate individual. Anyone that saw her speak knew that she really cared about this race. The only problem was is that she was spending up until November figuring out what she cared about in the race. So,
identity crisis.
Exactly. It was a campaign that started out with school lunches and ended up with
Windmills.
Personal financial responsibility and windmills.
So she was tilting at windmills, maybe, perhaps? The Don Quixote of the Democratic Party?
I think that is that's the one district that Republicans get to, you know, have their turn at having a big success, and that district is going to be that way. That's where Republicans have been sent to sit in the corner in our county.
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting to see what happens to the councilmatic lines as we go forward. You mentioned this earlier. All the incumbents, with the exception of Courtney Watson in District 1, won by larger margins in this election than in the last election. Do you attribute that to them being incumbents? And was there any offset by the wave of the Republican Party, and these numbers would have even been larger had that wave not been here? Because it struck me as here we are in a anti-incumbent movement, and they all won by bigger percentages.
I think there's two things, and I'm going to go back to it again, numbers. I mean, when these people...
Are you sure you're not an accountant like your dad?
Well, he's sitting right next to me, so hopefully he's not checking my numbers. But as we just talked about, in 2007, Republicans had a greater percentage of the vote. And in 2006, when these people were elected to office, Republicans had a greater percentage. And considering that most of these incumbents were Democrats, that explains that. Now, for District 5, you can't so much explain that other than the fact that Greg Fox has become a champion with Republicans.
He's done a great job.
Any Republican that is in Howard County sees Greg Fox as their, you know, their champion on the council, the guy that's going to fight for them. And when they're in his district, they are going to come out and vote for him because they think he has their best interest in mind.
And Greg doesn't jump all over all the issues, but when he picks an issue, he's passionate about it, he's well-informed about it, and he really goes to bat.
Right, and he's a matching personality up against Ken. I mean, there are two big personalities, political personalities, in our council government, and that's Greg Fox and Ken Allman. And they are equal in I guess, attitude in how they face one another. Ken doesn't much seem to like Greg, but he respects Greg, and vice versa.
And that makes a nice transition because we want to kind of finish up the real local races with the county executive race. That wasn't even close.
Right.
Trent, but nobody really thought it would be, except for maybe Gonzalez and his polling. But that turns me way off. I mean, Ken won by how? What kind of percentage? What was
it was 62.6% to 37.2%. And actually, I want to point out, since I keep going to the numbers, is that Ken had more total votes than there are Republicans registered in the entire county by about 10,000. He had 64,306 votes. And again, there's about 54,000 Republicans.
Right, right. And you imagine some Republicans voted for him, probably.
Oh, yeah. I think that there probably were, and it's not necessarily that they were rejecting Trent so much as Ken has, as far as being a steward for this county, done a good job.
So, really, I guess the big question on this race is now Ken has won a overwhelming reelection, but he's limited to two terms because Howard County County executives can only serve two terms. What's next for Ken? There's a lot of speculation about that. I've heard governor.
He's got a new website that was actually put up just the other day. It's not Howard County anymore. Now it's a big blue state of Maryland.
Big blue state of Maryland.
With a star at where Howard County is. So I think that he's dropping breadcrumbs along the way to let us know where he's headed. Now, there are other people that are speculating as to any number of appointments. I mean, Barbara Mikulski is no spring chicken.
She's in her 70s.
And that gets appointed by the governor, so, you know.
Now, what you're referring to is if Barbara decides after a couple of years she wants to retire, then O'Malley gets the right to appoint her successor. Some people have said...
Himself,
right? It's happened before.
Right.
And then Ken would... So how does Ken get to the governor's mansion that way?
Well, he gets to be right next to it and potentially be lieutenant governor. But yeah, these are all conspiracy theories that are wild and crazy.
Well, and as we've talked about before, the lieutenant governor does not have a great history of becoming governor in this state.
And right. Neither does Howard County
executives. And neither do right. Howard County executives. Attorney General was another spot that's been talked about for him. Doug Gansler, our current Attorney General, obviously has bigger aspirations. There's been talk of him running for governor next go around, and Peter Franchot as well. So there are several out there that are potentials.
And there are many people that say that if there is a primary, Ken would not run against Doug because the people are saying that those two are friends. I don't know of it from anyone, from any, obviously, any personal experience. I don't think Ken would even talk to me about any of that. But I it would be interesting to see how a primary would go down.
All right. Well, the obviously, the next question, though, that there's obviously a vacuum then. In 2014, it's a wide open race for county executive. So who are the front runners on the Republican side and who are the front runners on the Dem side?
Well, I think right off the bat, to talk about the Dems first, the front runners would be Guy Gazzone, and a lot of people are saying Courtney Watson. And I think that depends on how you're looking at the council. I mean, if Calvin decides to stick around, and because I believe, and I don't have the year that he was appointed in front of me, I believe due to term limits, since he was appointed and served at least 2 years,
yeah,
and then did two terms, this is his last term.
I was wondering about that because, yeah, he technically is in his third term.
Right. So he would actually be out of options as far as going back in the council. Courtney Watson could stay in go for another term if she wanted to. So I think those three are people that people are talking about as far as Gazzone, Watson, or Ball.
On the Dem side.
Right. And on the Republican side, I think the number one person that people are talking about on November 3rd was Greg Fox. I heard.
Which is interesting because that was never, I had never heard that before.
No, I always heard Alan Kittleman.
Night.
Right. And Alan Kittleman was one of the people going around at the Republican Party saying, gee, Greg Fox, he knows how to give a speech. Wouldn't he be a great executive?
Well, you know, what's really interesting, and someone else pointed this out to me on election night. If you look at Trent Kittleman's signs, they are the exact same color as Alan Kittleman's signs.
Hmm.
How brilliant to have your stepmother sort of lay the groundwork. It's the same name. I think a lot of her signs didn't even say
Trent. They didn't
Kittleman.
Say Trent. No, they just said
they
Kittleman.
They were just yellow, and they said Kittleman on them. And it's the same colors. And frankly, they're unusual colors because usually they're red and they're blue. They're unusual colors for politicians, and they're exact same colors. So some have suggested that was really just sort of a front to get Alan's name out there and sort of start that election cycle early.
Right, and I don't want to get hate mail. I was not at the Republican victory or Republican party on November 2nd. So
no,
I don't
you were at Clyde's with me.
Yeah, I don't want anyone saying, you weren't there, you don't know what was said. This is just what I was told. But yeah, I have heard that from a number of people, but I can tell you that Trent was running not for anyone else, but for the idea that she could win. I know that from talking to her. I know that from seeing her speak. And I think, even results notwithstanding, a lot of people were really impressed with how she ran her campaign and how she put herself out there. So I do think that Alan will benefit from, if he decided to run for county executive, there being a Kittleman in that spot for two ballots in a row. But I don't know if it was part of any greater plan in terms of, well, if we put it on this year, you'll recognize it later.
Yeah, I can't say it was part of any grand plan. I just think it was interesting.
You don't see Trent coming back and trying again?
No, I don't.
You know, Trent did run a good campaign, and I think Trent did give it her best shot. The problem was there weren't enough differences that were brought out between her and our current county executive, Ken Ullman.
That's true.
You need to motivate people to get out and vote for you, and I don't know if that motivation was clear. Nobody had a battle cry that they went to the ballot booth with.
We got to wrap up, but one of the things that that I said on my blog that would be fun to do on this show was to talk about some of the silly mailings that we got. And unfortunately, not a lot of people bought them to our little gathering at Clyde's that night. But there were some pretty silly mailings. You know, and both sides, the volume of mail on this campaign was pretty impressive.
Right. And independents, as you noted, got the most of it. I hardly got any from either side because I guess they thought my vote was already in the bag.
Well, you know, for me, the Republicans, they love to have any picture that they could get with a Dem that associated them with the National Party. Bob Flanagan sent out a picture of Courtney standing next to an Obama inauguration seal.
You know, not even a person.
Not even a person, but standing next to the seal. I thought that was pretty good. But one thing, as somebody in the development industry, I was happy to see, I didn't see a single bulldozer in any of the postcards this year. That was a big change from...
Wait, you didn't get any of Alan Klein's literature?
He didn't have bulldozers. He just had a lot of tall buildings.
And cars, right?
And cars.
And threatening to bulldoze trees.
Yeah.
So without the bulldozer, just the tree's in danger.
Right. Warren Miller was definitely the victim of some pretty substantial pieces.
Pretty substantial pieces. Poor Warren Miller, you know, Mr. No, but just certainly didn't seem to affect him either.
He's proud of his no. And you know what? That's what his voters want. His voters do want him to vote no. So, you know, they're going to have to, if Dems are going to go after Warren, getting him for voting no is not the way to do it, because that'll get his voters out even stronger than they were before.
Tom, I think we need to wrap up. We're running out of time here, but we want to thank you for coming.
We'll leave
today.
Time for your dad.
So we will. We actually have our 2-minute spot today with Skip Cole, Tom's dad. He's going to revisit with us an issue that we had spoken about some time ago. But we want to thank you for coming, Tom, and we wish you much luck with your blog. And I'm sure we'll have you back on again.
Okay.
Skip, welcome.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for coming by today.
Well, thank you for the invitation.
I hope I don't offend you, but, you know, we were supposed to start our podcast here at the mall over by Santastic. And I had an email exchange with your son earlier today. And for those of you that don't know Skip Cole, he's a very distinguished-looking gentleman with white hair, a white beard, and a white mustache. And, you know, Santa hasn't quite arrived at Santastic yet.
We thought the association might be a little bit too close.
Yeah, we were concerned that people might get confused and start bringing their kids over and try to have them sit on your lap.
So. And I wore my red suit just for the occasion.
Well, Skip, we've invited you to come on because we've made some fun over the brouhaha in Clarksville over the funeral home wanting to locate in between two churches, and how we thought that was kind of ridiculous for the Catholic Church to be all upset about that. But you bring a different perspective to that, so why don't you...
I don't think the issue is that it's a funeral home. I think it's more the magnitude of the proposed development that's going in there. If you really think about it, you're talking about a three-plus acre lot, with a 23,000-square-foot facility being built on it, and on an extremely busy thoroughfare on Route 108, south of Route 32, going towards Olney. The issue is more or less, and from my perspective, one of safety and adequacy. If you think, the zoning regulations for funeral homes were developed at a point in time when funeral homes were, as the name implies, typically the home of the mortician, where they would live in the facility and have, in essence, services in their parlor and so forth. The proposed development is something significantly different. It's looking at it and saying, first off, it's going to have three viewing rooms. And that's not an issue. I mean, like, candidly, if we were talking about something along the lines of Harry Witzke's funeral home in Ellicott City, or Columbia, Russ Witzke's funeral home, the Slack funeral home, that's entirely different. What we're talking about is a significantly different, it's more of a mortuary than a funeral home. We're talking about a huge facility that would have three viewing rooms, it would have a meeting room, if you will, and it would have a memorial chapel for services.
So and the hearse museum.
And yes, the owner collects hearses, and mentioned in the hearing that he was planning on displaying some of those hearses to the general public, and I can't wait to see them, candidly. I just don't want to see them there.
So your issue had nothing to do with the fact that it's a funeral home. It just has to do with basic development principles, which is that you can't squeeze a structure for whatever purpose it's being used that's too big in between two churches. It could have been anything.
That's exactly what my issue is. The issue has nothing to do with religion.
It's capacity.
Really, what it's looking at is a matter of safety. If you look at it, on the three-plus acres, they're planning on putting just under 70 parking spaces. Well, look at the magnitude of it. Each viewing room, I think the regulations require 10 parking spaces. Then you're supposed to have parking spaces for the employees. But where the issue really gets complicated and where the zoning regs really don't address the current, if you will, operation from funeral homes is when you get into the meeting area, if you not a cafeteria, but a small meeting area, and the memorial chapel. The chapel that they are proposing is going to have in excess of 150 spaces. Well, where are those people going to park?
Right.
I mean, like, the thing is 108 is significantly busy. And the fear that I would have is going up and down Route 108 is the people parking on that two-lane road.
Well, you got Ten Oaks and you got Route 32 there. That whole exchange right there is a very busy intersection.
It's a nightmare at times. Absolute nightmare.
As we wrap up, just quickly, where does it stand now? What's going on?
The hearing examiner has not made their ruling, but the anticipation is that the ruling will be in favor of the development. Now, that's the anticipation, and then, candidly, the parties will appeal it.
I think it's funny that here we have Skip Cole, the accountant, talking about legal issues, and we had his son, the attorney, talking about financial issues. So,
and numbers.
On that note.
Okay, well, that wraps up yet another episode of And Then There's That. On behalf of myself and my co-host, Paul Scalney, we'd like to thank our producer, Dave Bittner, for making us look good on radio, and to General Growth Properties and the Mall in Columbia for hosting our show today. We'll be back again on November 19th with special guest Colleen West, the executive director of the Howard County Arts Council. Colleen will share what's happening in the Hoco Loco art scene this fall and winter, and we hope you'll join us.